Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Institute for Personal Development, Kriya Yoga Ashram, where total consciousness is the new frontier.
Kriya Yoga is union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices to initiate this process.
Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of the Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty good today. How about you?
Well, I'm doing pretty good today. Thanks for asking. And we want to thank you, listeners, for tuning in. So today on The Voice of Yoga, we will talk about Dharma, or an individual's collective purpose for this incarnation. The universe gives us life and supports us in it, but we are all created with a divine purpose. In this show, we will discuss how apotheosis is a way of revealing the divine intentions of your life. World mind, or the collective consciousness, is a counterfeit divine mind and an obstacle to the truth. Listen as Swami explains how Dharma is divine mind individualized as your consciousness. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. We are talking consciousness. Join the Kriya Yoga spiritual advance, get the light in your soul, and live by divine law. So Swami, we have a lot of questions, I think, for you for this topic, but let's start in explaining to our listeners, what exactly is Dharma?
Dharma is a yoga term that means your collective purpose. See, the universe gives us life, but it does expect something from us in return. And so a big part of the spiritual practice is trying to attune yourself or figure out what is my individual collective purpose for this particular incarnation.
Well, then that is something I think that we all strive to try to figure out is what is our Dharma? How do we go about doing that?
Yeah, and I think one of the things that could be really helpful is that when you're first starting out on a spiritual path is to use a generic purpose that can fit anyone, which is basically to glorify the Creator. And that's a pretty safe bet that if everything that you're doing is designed to acknowledge the presence of this life-giving force that is available to all of us.
So in the summary, you know, we had said that the universe gives us life and supports us in it, but we are all created with a divine purpose. So I think what you're saying is that we are actually put in this incarnation so that we can revere God and trying to live life through God.
Yeah, exactly. That God lives its life through us, basically, is the way that you really want to play it out. Attuning yourself to the will of God is really how it all plays out. But what you find is that it gets complicated, because we really don't know what the will of God is or should be or could be. And in the framework of trying to figure this out, there aren't real clear guidelines other than to understand the fruits of your activities. Whatever it is that you're doing, if it reflects divine qualities, then you're pretty much certain that what you're doing is in alignment with divine law. It's kind of like Joseph Campbell used to call following your bliss, that if what you're doing seems to come quite easy and comfortable, and it's not something that you're grinding out and struggling with, it's an indicator that it is being backed by grace. Also, if what you're doing has duration, because you remember, spirit is eternal. It always was, it always will be. So whatever it is that spirit puts into form is enduring. So if what you're doing keeps breaking down and if it isn't lasting and you're struggling to keep it alive, then it's an indicator that what you're doing is not backed by divine law. And so these are some of the things or some of the ways that I think we can go about trying to attune ourselves with a collective purpose.
So if we put God first, right, so if we're glorifying the Creator, I would think that that would certainly set us on the path of what we're put on this earth to do. That would lead us to our Dharma.
Right. Now, here's the kicker on the whole thing is trying to know what God is. Because like you say, the secret is in the instruction of putting God first. But until we really know what the one true God is and put that first, which means that we internalize that as our symbol for validation in our consciousness, that's what sets the whole thing in motion. But where the complications get, in scripture they call it false gods. And in the Yoga Sutras, they tell you ignorance is mistaking the impermanent for the permanent. So if what it is that you're using, whatever it is that you think God is, if it's not the one true God, then it won't be demonstrable. It will not have all of the divine qualities and it won't have the benefits. And so that's one of the, I think, the tricky things that you have to start to work with. Is knowing what is the one true God. And then the other thing is having an understanding of what are the false gods that are out there. And that's where I think we can find our answer. That's why we said in the opening, apotheosis becomes the path for finding our Dharma. That this process of the individual becoming divine is where your Dharma will be revealed to you as you start to break through the veil of a consciousness that is apart from spirit.
Yeah, I'm glad you had mentioned apotheosis because that was going to be my next topic of our conversation to talk to you about. And that is, can you explain more deeply what apotheosis is and just so we all are on the same page?
Yeah, apotheosis is the process of the individual becoming divine. That typically unfolds in three phases, symbolized by what was called the hero's journey. The journey begins with the separation, the journey itself, and then the return. All of this parallels the metamorphosis of a butterfly. Because a butterfly isn't born a butterfly, it's born a caterpillar. And a caterpillar, or any insect in the larvae state, they do nothing but indulge. And the characteristics of the human in the larvae state, we're careless, we're emotional, we're indulgent, we're excitable. Very similar to the caterpillar. A caterpillar doesn't wake up one morning and say, where did these wings come from? But a caterpillar goes into a chrysalis. And this is where I think a lot of the disciplines and the rituals and the ceremonies and the ordeals of metaphysical, mystical systems and religions in their original format all had in place, because that was kind of like a lifestyle that put the human in a chrysalis phase in development. The caterpillar is completely different than the butterfly. So whatever it is that we are before we go through this process, when you come out, it's not going to leave you off where it picked you up. You will be completely different. The characteristics typically of the human in the chrysalis phase, which is what we're talking about now, is that you are careful, you're intelligent, you're ambitious, but you're abstinent. And you're struggling with the things that we would crave in the larvae state. Mm-hmm. But from this chrysalis, the caterpillar does emerge as a butterfly. So one of the biggest barriers, I think, sometimes is people get lost in the chrysalis and they think the chrysalis phase is the goal. And so they're abstaining, they're suffering, they're struggling, and they think they're spiritual. Now, when that caterpillar emerges from the chrysalis and it becomes a butterfly, what you notice is that the butterfly has options that the caterpillar doesn't. Butterflies, if they want, they can crawl around on the ground, and if they want, they can fly. They can access another medium, another dimension of reality, navigate through it, utilize it as a resource of energy. And the characteristics of the human in the adult state is that we are carefree, we're wise, we're liberated, we're enthusiastic. Now, on the surface, careless, emotional, indulgent, excitable can be mistaken for carefree, wise, liberated, enthusiastic. But with regard to the actual experience, there's no comparison. And there's a lot that goes on in this process of apotheosis that, because we don't sprout wings, can sometimes be misrepresented or misunderstood or not even achieved, because it is instruction to do something, that there is a goal here, that it's not just to be in a chrysalis, it's not just to abstain in hopes of some life or reward in an afterlife, that this apotheosis is the reward in and of itself, that the spiritual life is the reward. And the beauty of it is that we do not have to die physically. The physical body does not have to die. What has to die is the identity with the human aspect of this incarnation.
Wow. Am I correct in assuming that these three phases are also different levels of consciousness?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's exactly where we experience all of this, is in consciousness. And then what we learned is whatever that it is that we hold in our consciousness will appear in our experience. Because the formula that we use never changes. Is how we think is what we become. But in this process of apotheosis, we're moving from the five sense lower mind into the higher mind, which is a spiritual faculty.
I'd like to ask you some questions about, again, in the summary, we talked about world mind or the collective consciousness and how it relates as being a counterfeit to the divine mind. I'm wondering if you could start explaining what that is to us.
Yeah, in this whole process of development, we start out primarily where we are mostly functioning through the lower mind, which is directly related to the five senses. And what is reported in the lower mind is what's called duality. And duality is the part of our reality that is really apart from spirit, from the unified state. And so it is kind of like a false sense of existence, but it is reported in our senses. Now, if we live from that lower mind, and that is what we identify with, then we are in what's called the domain of karma. We have a belief in duality, which is a reality that is in half, and it is governed by two powers. So it's an ongoing struggle between good and evil, right and wrong, light and dark, life and death. And that kind of like paints your reality. But you're in the realms of suffering and decay, and it's going to break down, and it's going to fail. And so the call really was to get off of the sinking ship, to get out of the limited perspective of body-bound awareness, and to become divine, which is where the human finds this experience of immortality.
Well, this is a great place to pause to hear a word from our sponsors. So listeners, we'll be back with you in just a few moments. Kriya Yoga Theory 2 is a unique and revolutionary practice and forum designed to facilitate the growth process in human development. Apotheosis is a real experience and has an evidence procedure. You cannot lead someone to permanent change by doing for them what they must do themselves. Personal accountability and responsibility are the foundation of Kriya Yoga Theory 2. You must be engaged and devoted. Prana power brings virtue to overcome fear, wisdom to overcome ignorance, purpose to overcome selfishness, enthusiasm to overcome laziness. Kriya Yoga is a path of action, knowledge, and devotion. These sessions are a celestial positioning system to guide the individual into union with the divine. For more information or to sign up for your next session online, go to www.ipdtransform.com. Namaste. Welcome back. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. So, Swami, I want to get back to talking about world mind and collective consciousness. I understand those are one of the same thing, but I think I need a little bit more clarification on what exactly is counterfeit divine mind.
Yeah, divine mind, or the one mind, is really God itself. That is the underlying life force of all reality. That everything is God. Everything is this one pure consciousness. And the whole key to this whole process is for us to acknowledge the presence of it. But divine mind is invisible and it's intangible. This concept of God, though it's everywhere and in everything, and it's what they call omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient, it is all-knowing, all-powerful, and it is everywhere. But nobody sees it. And the reason is because it is whole. It is unity consciousness, and there is no contrast in that consciousness. And the thing about divine mind is that it is the law of harmony. It is perfect creation. And if the human being can identify with this force or this consciousness that is here, readily available to us, then we will harmonize ourselves with it. But we don't come in with the programming to have awareness of this invisible, intangible source. We come in with a mind that is really calibrated to pick up on what is apart from this source, which is what we've been calling duality. That when something manifests, it splits off from this unified state. It manifests in half and it leaves behind a complementary unmanifested other part. And that kind of gives us this trinity that a lot of religions and even in mythology, they kind of give you a three-dimensional reality system. There's the underworld, there's Earth, and there's Olympus. there's matter, mind, and spirit. And in physics, there's particles, waves, and the void. So this is kind of like what we're dumped into. But the equipment that we have, we are primarily drawn to the parts that are fragmented. So we are drawn towards duality, and we have a tendency to have a belief in two powers. But it kind of hypnotizes us, it mesmerizes us. And what we had to be taught was how to separate from our attachment to duality and join back with this unified state. But like I said, it's invisible and it's intangible, and we're accustomed to dealing with sensory input, and that's how we determine our reality. And that's where pratyahara comes in, this whole thing of sense withdrawal, or even your fifth yama, non-sensuality, learning how to move beyond the testimony of the senses, move beyond the input of the lower mind. And then we had to start to develop an awareness for something that was invisible and intangible. Now, because you have three different dimensions, you've got particles, which are things visible and tangible. You have waves, which are things that are invisible but tangible. And then you've got this void or this nothing, which is invisible and intangible. So when you're trying to grow psychologically and spiritually in a positive direction, in order to do that successfully, you have to internalize the invisible, intangible source. If you, by mistake, you internalize something that is invisible but tangible, then what you'll find is that it doesn't demonstrate. It's kind of like putting water in a lawnmower and then trying to figure out why isn't it starting. And then somebody tells you to take the water out, you know, take it out of the gas tank, take it out of the fuel line, take it out of the filter, take it out of the carburetor. And then you go into your shed and you find a container of apple juice and you put that in the lawnmower. And you know, you've done all of this work, you've cleaned out that whole lawnmower of all of that water, and now you've put something in there which isn't, you know, a different liquid. It's different than the water, it's definitely different, but again, apple juice is not what that lawnmower needs in order for that combustion engine to work. So of course you're not going to be able to start that. But if you went through all of that process of cleaning it out and then you put gasoline in, and then you've got a much better chance of that lawnmower being able to cut your grass. And the same is true with apotheosis, that if we do not join with this unified state, with unity consciousness, and we use a concept that comes from the realms of waves, And typically, it might not even come from your individual consciousness, because your individual consciousness, oftentimes, your individual consciousness has sprung from the collective consciousness or the cosmic mind. And in the framework of this collective consciousness, we have all of these concepts and beliefs that we internalize, and we kind of live out from them. Instead of your individual consciousness sprouting out from divine mind, stems from this cosmic mind. And that becomes a counterfeit, because now you have a concept of what you think being spiritual is. And even though it may reflect a lot of the characteristics and the qualities, there are a lot of us who are doing this, and we are striving to be good people, good humans. And that's about as far as it goes. You become a good human, which is still a mortal being. You're still under the law of karma, and you're in the cycle of death and rebirth. But if you can figure out what the true divine mind is, which is invisible and intangible, it does not report in your senses at all. And you cultivate yourself so that you can start to develop soul faculty, so that you can start to sense and interpret the ideas that are coming in. The energy that comes in through divine mind is in whole, not in half. It is complete. And that in Christianity was called the Christ. See, the Christ is what enables divine love to be intelligible in human consciousness. But one of the things in order to be able to do this is you have to understand the role of silence in this whole process.
So let's try to pull this all together now. So Dharma is divine mind. And then we said in the summary, individualized as our consciousness. So would we be using silence and meditation as a avenue to make this happen?
Right. But one of the things you're going to find is that silence is golden. But not all that glitters is gold. There's a huge difference between silence as a concept from the world mind individualized as an individual human concept versus silence as divine mind individualized as individual consciousness. And the best way to start to be able to determine the difference between the imitation from the truth is by the fruits of your action. Because that's what we started to say earlier. If what it is that you're doing is demonstrating divine qualities, which means that your life is just unfolding miraculously, that you are experiencing perfect health, perfect happiness, your relationships are harmonious, that you are living in the kingdom of heaven. If you are grinding it out and some things are working out and some things are, you know, breaking down and you're constantly putting out fires, then there's an indicator that what it is that you think God is may be an imitation concept of God and not this invisible and intangible source. And so that's the caution that I think you can start to look for as you're starting to figure out what your Dharma really is. What is my purpose? Because like I said, a lot of us, we have declared our Dharma without it really being ordained from divine mind. It really came from the world mind. And just because we figured that it was in compliance with some of the rules that are laid out from the religious communities, that we figured that this is going to lead me to apotheosis. But what we find is that we're still living under the law of karma. We're not liberated from this law of karma and putting ourselves under the law of harmony, peace, love, happiness, and goodness.
Wow, great. Well, I think it's about that time we need to start closing down our show for today. So listeners, be sure to visit Swami's website, Institute for Personal Development, and you can reach that at www.ipdtransform.com. And be sure to tune in to our Facebook Live episodes that we have every Wednesday at 5 p.m. So, Swami, do you have any other final thoughts about today's program?
Well, I would like to encourage everybody to keep attuning themselves to divine law, which is seeking expression at this very moment, and get out of the influence of personal will, personal desire, and move beyond the control of the law of karma and graduate into the law of perfection. Start to see what it's like to live out from the perfection of being and remain in complete harmony with divine law. And with that, I'll wish everybody a good day. Namaste.
And thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. This is Lisa Winton, along with Swami Jayananda. We'll be signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga kind of day. Namaste.